Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. On the line with me, will we call that a gray?
Light gray,
Light gray with an A or an E gray, Cameron? That's the real question. V-neck, producer extraordinaire, MTG Orange Belt, Cameron McCoy. How are you doing, friend?
Great, man. It's a beautiful day here in Iowa. I mean, like, it's just absolutely gorgeous, so... The heat has broken.
It's raining like cats and dogs here in Kansas City.
Really?
And the Royals are trying to get in a doubleheader today. It's very stressful for me.
Oh, that's bad. Yeah.
But hey, what are we going to do? We are going to talk about Magic. Boy, do we have a lot of Magic to talk about. Cameron, you played not just Legacy, but this is 2 weeks in a row for you of Standard.
It is. Yeah, man. And I'm enjoying every moment of it right now. I'm still playing the Blue-White Monument in Paper. And, dude, it's a great deck. I mean, it's low to the ground, and it's amazing, like, how quickly you can rebuild the battlefield after, like, something bad happens with either, like, you're playing an opponent with a Wrath effect or something like that. Dusk to Dawn is incredibly, absurdly good, where you can just refill your hand and go, you know, and go off again. Or the Militia Captain is, you know, I've played
he's
that
in the flip card, right?
Yeah, he's a flip card where his power and toughness is equal to the number of creatures on the battlefield. So he can be absurdly powerful, especially with like the monument generation of that. And it's interesting, like, I mean, the deck suffers if you're not playing a monument on turns 3-4. You know, it has a hard time going over the top that it needs to, but there's still enough legs there where I feel like it's, for the most part, pretty competitive. So I ended up going 2-2 in Standard, and there, you know, some interesting decks. Mono Red is everywhere now in the shop. You know, it wasn't 2 weeks ago or a week ago, and this week very much so. Everybody wants to play it, right?
Imagine that.
Yeah, and there's enough things that exist. I think Declaration in Stone is still a pretty solid choice as far as like trying to balance the battlefield and whatnot, and you could just go so wide with Monument that it's not a huge deal for me. What else? Oh, and then okay, so yeah, blue red control that's splashing black. Nicol Bolas is, I can't get over how much of a house. I mean, like, will it ever see like legit play other than in Standard? Probably not, right? But man, I don't know how many times, like, I was playing this opponent in the three games that we played, where it was, yeah, hit seven to the face. I don't care. Like, it's just like, I'm going to deal seven damage to you for seven mana, and that's totally fine by me, right? So, man, that is a very, very good Magic card, especially when you don't, like with the Monument deck that I have. Not a lot of efficient ways to deal with Nicol Bolas. When it's on the battlefield, it's on the battlefield for me.
I was going to say, and by that point, they probably stabilized.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're doing so many things. Every single one of those plus one, or whatever they are, the activations are just kind of destructive for me. So it's a very, very good card.
Mm-hmm. Did you also play some Legacy?
Yeah, I played Legacy and playing Jeskai Stoneblade. So that's the one that's really kind of making its way in a lot of the online leagues right now. And it's strictly almost like a blue-white Stoneblade deck that splashes red for a couple lightning bolts in the main and then pyroblasts in the side. It's really kind of like taking that Miracles list and the old Stoneblade list and kind of marrying them together, right?
Interesting.
And I like it. There's two counter spells, two spell pierces, Force of Wills, and then some more counters in the sideboard. So it's a very counter-heavy deck, and I dig it. I dig it a lot. So there's not a lot to talk about. One of the opponents that I was playing against was playing Coco, which was awesome. And he had the card that was revolted, like it was revolt that would allow things to come back from the graveyard. I can't remember. Renegade Rallier. And it would have standstills in the graveyard. And holy cow, was that hilarious. I mean, was it a great deck?
Wow.
Probably not, but like there's so much value going on. It was quite hilarious. So it had Spell Quellers, Renegade Rallier. It was a really good brew. I'll just say that.
That guy was proving that you don't have to play legacy level cards in a legacy event, right?
Like, yeah, yeah. And he went like 3-1 as well. So I mean, you know, he's a good Magic player too. But and then the other one was a blue white Helm control deck, which, I mean, talk about really fun control. I mean, it's playing Energy Fields and Rest in Peace in the main, and then Helm of Obedience, where the entire thing is like you're just trying to like tap Helm to put your opponent's entire deck essentially in exile because they can't go into the graveyard. So it's a really interesting combo. I knew of it, but I haven't actually seen it in action before. And it's really good. It's like super fun as far as like a control deck. And I mean, then it has like Jaces. So I mean, we're talking like two win cons, and you just better hope that you have a lot of counter magic. And the guy was playing a lot of counter magic, and we went to time on that one, which was interesting and fun. It was a really good day of Magic that night. So yeah, that was my weekend.
You know, I bet that guy finds that there's a ton of incidental value in Rest in Peace as well. Like,
oh yeah.
Like when you're playing against the Deathrite Shaman Tarmogoyf decks and things like that, like, man, that's kind of a problematic. Of course, the reason you play that deck is for the game that you play against Dredge. And game one, you get to Rest in Peace then.
Yeah,
and
right.
To say that they'll throw a hissy fit might be an understatement. There's like a 50-50 shot they will just leave the game store, right?
For sure.
You know, but I think that deck is interesting. And it did, the Energy Field deck was like a big deal, but it used to be mono blue.
Okay.
It's pretty crazy that it's, you know, but then Legacy kind of sped up and then slowed down, and that deck kind of just dissipated into nothing, you know? Mm-hmm. But I remember Energy Field being one of the early speculations that like, oh, this could go up, and it didn't. Hmm. Anyway, that was like the early days of hashtag MTG finance.
Yeah, right.
So, Cameron, we're going to, later on in this episode, I'm gonna review Mana Traders, but basically I utilized them to play a lot of Standard this week. So I ran through a bunch of leagues to kind of learn the format. I played Black Green Constrictor Energy, Blue Red Control, Rug Energy twice, and then Mono Red incorrectly. Through MTGO.
Yeah.
I also played a game day, and I'll talk about that here in a second. But my impressions of the format. So I'll start with Green-Black Energy, the first. Like, that was actually the deck I found to be the most asleep at the wheel.
Really?
And I actually screenshotted my results, but I never had a split match. Everything was either 2-0 or 0-2. Like, I would either house someone, or both matches I lost, they had Wrath effects, and that deck is just like they Wrath you, and it's like, well, okay, you know, and you're so invested into creating a density on the board. And I mean, you know this, like, it's not just control decks that have Wrath. Like, the Blue White Monument deck has the, you know, Dusk to Dawn, and you can't like, oh, well, I'm not going to make my guys bigger because then you just have crappy guys. And so that was the one that I felt was kind of the most straightforward, at least in terms of sideboard. And a lot of these, I will fully admit, I just pulled up the most recent performing list and just put it in. Now, with Blue Red Control, I got Wafo Tapa's list because it was kind of interesting. And it was also the most competitive, highest finishing deck that is still using Nicol Bolas. A lot of the current, more new builds don't do that. And look, I want to use me a big Planeswalker win condition, right?
Right, yeah.
And that's the one, the deck I had the most success with. Card that I just kind of fell in love with was Hour of Devastation.
It's a fun one, man.
Yeah, I'm pretty convinced that I would have 5-0'd the league if I would have not played incorrectly, but I forgot that Hour of Devastation also kills Planeswalkers.
Yeah.
And so I didn't sequence things correctly, which I mean, again, because I'm learning this format. Dude, I have so many misplays, like just a ton. But anyway, love that deck. Rug Energy is my favorite in the format right now because it's the most me. And it is, I keep telling people this, it is just a 50% deck against the field. It doesn't have any truly great matchups. Maybe Mardu Vehicles is pretty good. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't have any truly terrible ones either. Like, everything feels like a coin flip. The big problem with the deck is, A, you can end up with a ton of mana and nothing to do with it. Because everything's an energy sink. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, you like, if you don't have a Tireless Tracker active, like, you can just have, like, seven mana in play and draw a Long Tusk Cub off the top. And you're like, cool. Okay.
Yeah.
So, like, the big payoff finishers sometimes let the deck down. So people have been adding Elder Deep Fiends. But then that's, like, atrocious against Mono Red. Because you've got this, like, eight drop. So there's some weirdness there. And then I played... Cameron, can we talk about my darkest moment this week?
Please, man. I want to hear about this play for play.
I decided, okay, I'm going to try this mono red deck. And again, because all mono red decks look the same to me, I just downloaded the one that did well in the most recent league, not realizing what it was. And here's the problem. It was not the PT deck. It was a deck that 5-0'd a league. So, obviously it's okay. But it was like bigger red. It like had three mana, like the Hanweir Garrison. It had, these bigger red cards, basically. And the haste package was all but gone. It still played Hazorid and a bunch of the burn spells. I took that thing into a friendly league, and all these other leagues, I went 3-2 or better. And then this league, I went 0-4 drop. I played against a Kalidus deck 3 times.
Wow.
And dude, let me tell you something. When you're playing 3-drop red guys and they're playing Kalidus, it's pretty, pretty tough.
Yeah, right.
And I got rocked. Now, I fully will admit, I did not play optimally. I made all kinds of mistakes. But I need to play that mono red deck again. That's the actual preferred list.
Sure.
And try it out. When I went to game day, as we predicted, mono red's all over the place.
Yeah, man.
And I did not tune my list very well to it. I ended up making, I think there were 9 of us. I made the top 4, and then I lost both rounds in the top 4. One to zombies, which is really coin flippy. Again, I'm playing Rug Energy. And then I beat mono red in the Swiss, and then I lost to it in the elimination rounds. I didn't feel like I had really tuned the list very well. Most people online are going to 4 magma sprays in their deck. I just had 2 total.
Okay.
And that was a huge mistake. That was a huge mistake because one magma spray just makes the biggest difference. I will say I was sorting through cards and I found a dual shot, which is 1 red mana, instant speed, deal 1 damage to 2 things.
Oh, yeah, man. That's really good.
I got to cast it 1 time against mono red and it was a massive blowout. It was a massive blowout. So... just kind of thinking in terms of that instead of more of a mid-rangey deck because, man, everybody's playing mono red. The 2 guys that won my game day, incidentally, one was playing mono black zombies, which is just a house against them.
Oh, yeah.
The other guy was playing mono white life gain. Tribal horse deck.
Oh, okay. I'm not familiar with this, but I like it.
Cameron, I think you should play this deck because... Not only does it have Crested Sunmare, which is maybe the most majestic artwork in the history. So Crested Sunmare is the 5-mana 5/5, right? And it says whenever you gain life, you put a 5/5 white horse token in, right? at the end step, and all other horses gain indestructible. So basically, you fill up your deck with him and a bunch of, white weenies with life gain.
Yeah.
I don't think the red deck can ever, ever beat you.
Probably not, yeah.
And, all kinds of things. You actually play, Fumigate in your deck because all your horses have indestructible. So you just lose the Sunmare, but you might have, 3 5/5s otherwise, and all your opponent's stuff dies. It's hysterical. So, anyway, those are the 2 decks that won because there was so much mono red at our tournament.
Yeah.
But, yeah, again... I know we're not the most standard-centric podcast, but I've actually been I've been enjoying the format. I wouldn't say it's the best standard, but I feel like there's 5 or 6 high-quality decks.
Yeah, and honestly, man, if I were to compare this standard set to the last like 2 years, not only am I most, this is the most interested I have been in like wanting to watch like tournament level play and whatnot, but I don't know, I am having a blast playing. I mean, I've only played one deck so far, but I'm having a really, really good time doing that.
Yeah, and I know we're kind of giving Modern the short shrift this week, but I didn't play it, you know? And so
sure.
I would have played Storm, but instead I chose to do the game day just because the EV was so much higher.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Cameron, so what we're going to do next segment, we are just going to speculate needlessly without base about the new digital Magic product. And then I'm going to talk about my experience with Mana Traders, review it, and then we'll do our final discussion points at the end of the show. We'll be right back. This week, we'd like to thank Patreon supporters like Hayden Walsh, Chris Watts, and James Wright for supporting the show. If you'd like to support us on Patreon, go to thespikefeed.com and click on the donate button. We'd love to have you. Hey, Cameron.
What's up, dude?
You know how you text me like every week wanting updates on the Magic the Gathering MMO?
Yeah.
Well, I don't have anything to tell you about that.
Oh.
I know, like, deep in your heart, you're like, I am ready to be Chandra, right?
My fiery temper would be a Chandra, yeah.
Is there any way it's going to be an actual full-on MMO? Like, I'm picturing more of, like, a Diablo vibe. Something like that, but maybe it will actually be World of Warcraft with Jace or whatever. I don't know. It just seems like that would take a lot of work and resources to do correctly.
For sure.
I mean, I'm surprised that they didn't like try and graft it onto something like, you know, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, but it's Magic the Gathering Battlegrounds, right? Or something like that's even more current.
That'd be amazing, yeah.
Seriously, though, why is it not a... And I know everybody's on this bandwagon, but doesn't it make a lot more sense for it to be a like a League of Legends thing?
Yeah, kind of, right? I mean, you're kind of like awards management, that sort of thing. And
yeah, well, there's like heroes and stuff, right? Yeah. And so you could just be that. Like, that makes a lot more sense to me. Hey, it would still be probably a terrible knockoff. I get that. But it just seems like that kind of a game fits a lot better than an MMO, whatever. So we got the name of the next digital product in like a month at HasCon.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to talk more about the product, and apparently there's going to be some closed beta action. Now, these are all impressions that haven't all the way been confirmed, but what I feel is that it looks like Magic Digital Next will launch a client like the Blizzard application.
Mm-hmm.
And that MTGO is basically going to be untouched. That this is another new product that will replace and theoretically improve duels. Meaning, it's got its own thing that will work on like tablet and Windows and God please Mac. That would be nice.
Yeah, right.
But Cameron, let's pretend for a second that this is a completely separate product from MTGO. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think we can all agree that hey, if they say MTGO's getting a full update too, looks better, works better, better economy, that would be fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
But let's look at it from the perspective of just replacing duels.
Yeah.
What do you want it to be?
Oh, man. A cross-platform product for sure. Like, I want this to be, I pick up my iPad, I can play it. I can pick up my, you know, computer on a Mac or whatever, and I can still play Magic. That would be first. The more and more I think about it, I think for it to be successful and to have like real legs, I think it's going to need its own economy of some sort. I think that's the success of Magic the Gathering Online is it has its own economy, and that's really what drives it. And that's very much a part of Magic the Gathering is being able to trade and to build these decks based off of like a pool of everything. I think that's necessary if this thing is going to have legs. That's like probably numero uno for me.
Okay, and we're assuming that the game functions. You know what I mean? Like, the servers work and all that. Like, of course we're not going to...
Yeah, yeah.
Let's assume that it's a technically competent product, which, hey, maybe... You know, lots of online games launch with issues.
Sure.
But I think for me, I would definitely echo that. Like, you have to have some kind of mechanism for card acquisition. It cannot just be like, hey, you know... Here is all of Magic, or you only get this pre-constructed deck or whatever. So I think you and I both would agree that it needs to be maybe a little bit more fleshed out than what you were doing in Duels.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So maybe a little bit deeper. In the last release of Duels, they did have, you know, a little bit more of an intense deck builder. But if you remember the early versions of Duels, the deck building was very constricted.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, I don't want it to be... Hearthstone. I don't want it to be like something that just takes the Magic rule book and shreds it.
Sure.
I don't need that, and I don't want it. And I think that's actually a disservice to the product. There are some interesting interface things that it could do. And I know some people have kind of gone back and forth about the automated mana system. But if you look at Eternal, the way they do it is pretty intriguing. So you don't actually see the mana tap. So that it's not represented. So whenever you play a mana card, it just fills up in like this numerical counter down at the bottom of your screen. And so that way you can actually just determine how you're paying for things.
Yeah.
Right? That would be an interesting way to handle it. Then, of course, you can't have non-basics. So that's another issue.
Yeah.
What I would really like it to have is a fully featured limited function.
Yeah.
And maybe that's different than what we think of as limited now. But if you have... So if it's just straight up constructed basic Magic, there is no way on earth I'm playing it.
Mm-hmm.
No way. I'm not. If you say, hey, there's drafts, now I'm listening.
Yeah.
Now you've got my attention. So I'm fine with them simplifying the mana system, especially if you're trying to get it onto a phone.
Yeah.
You almost have to do that. But a working economy and some kind of limited functionality, because I hope... I'd like to think most people believe this, that the best highway to get into competitive Magic is through limited.
Oh, yeah.
And so if you have that baked into your product, it's going to be an easy transition point. Anything else you're really looking for in it, Cameron?
Yeah, you know, I mean, this is so weird for me to say, but if they could build it like Hearthstone, so if there is like a daily draft that you could do that was free to play, and I think that's kind of echoes like the economy aspect of it. But I mean, if like once a day you could just kind of draft a game of Magic and play or build a deck every single day and play just like you would do in Hearthstone, or you have packs or in gold or something like that, that's going to keep me coming as well. I mean, I think that's very, very important as far as like having a daily user base. And if you're going to continue with your Magic Online property, it needs to be slightly different in how that economy is handled. And I think that means having some sort of like, we want you to play this game as much as possible, so we're going to make it semi-free in some way. I think that would be very, very huge.
And then you can invest in additional packs or
exactly,
whatever, right?
Exactly, yeah,
like, yeah, yeah. I think the other thing, and we've talked about this as a huge mistake with Duels, is you've really got to open up the platforms that it's available to. Like, if it is just Windows, iOS, and Android again, I don't know, man. Like, one of the big competitive advantages you could have over Hearthstone is the fact that you're on a console, and that that console game syncs up with whatever can be played on your tablet. You know? Look, I know that there are a ton of listeners out there that are the PC gamer, and they're going to say, what would be the point of having it on a console? You know, blah, blah, blah. Doesn't, like, we're talking about millions of units across all these consoles. Now, Duels was on Xbox One, which, you know, hey, there's plenty of Xbox Ones out there, but the problem was if your Xbox One account did not sync up with whatever PC on, or I'm sorry, Duels on Steam was doing, which was made it pointless then. But the whole idea is that I can start a draft while I'm waiting at the shop, and then I could go home, fire up my PlayStation, and finish it. That would be pretty sick.
Yeah,
that would be pretty sick.
That'd be great.
So, yeah. We'll see. Yeah. We'll know more in about a month.
Hopefully optimistic. I'll say that.
Yeah, yeah. The bastion of optimism here at the Spike.
Yeah,
here.
Right.
But look, I feel like our doubts are well earned at this stage, though, in all seriousness.
I think so, yeah.
Because, you know, whenever you come to me and say, hey, we can hardly get this card game to work properly, but we're going to make an MMO. I mean, what do you expect me to...
Mm-hmm.
Good? So, anyway. All right, let's transition a little bit, Cameron. So, a few weeks ago, I got recommended... Or it was recommended to me to try Mana Traders.
Yeah.
Okay, at the shop. And so I put out my feelers on the show. I got a bunch of emails, a couple actually, about, you know, with positive reactions to the service. Now, I just want to say this. We have nothing to do with anybody. We are the most, like, I've never talked to anybody from Mana Traders. I've never interacted with them on the internet. I know nothing about who they are. This was purely... a guy at the shop recommending it, and me and Cameron deciding to try it. Now, Cameron's super busy at work this week, so he's going to try it later on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a rental service for Magic Online. And so I fired it up, and I got to admit, I was overall pretty impressed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm piloting the $35 a month plan, which set my limit at like just over 200 tickets. For a standard deck. Now, the way that they work it is there are these tiers. I believe there's a $10, a $35, a $50, and then maybe $100. But you have a limited number of ticks of cards that you can rent out at a time. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And by looking at that limit, you have a pretty good idea of what formats you'll fit in. So my limit's just over 200. There's no way that I can afford a competitive modern deck with that limit, right?
Sure.
But I can have basically every standard deck. But they also have a time limit. It's called mana hours. So they take the number of ticks. So let's say I rent 200 tickets worth of stuff, and then I have it for 10 hours. That would be 2,000 mana hours. So you have a certain set amount of mana hours a month. The best way to utilize this service is to rent a deck, shotgun 5 matches. And standard right now, that averaged me about 2 hours, 2.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
The only one that went way longer than that was when I was playing Blue-Red Control. And then you return it. And then, in my experience, I've gotten nowhere near making a dent into my mana hours. The benefit of this is that I've been able to test a lot of standard decks very quickly, learn the format much more quickly than I could testing through buying a deck.
Yep.
And also, whenever you're in a situation like I am, where... holding onto a standard deck on Magic Online is a financially very risky experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know somebody's going to say, hey, if you spend $35 a month, over time you could definitely afford a standard deck. And that is true. But what I found is on Magic Online, if I stop paying attention for a week or 2 weeks, I lose all my value, or like a giant chunk, 40% of my value just gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm trying to trade it back, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, I could rent a deck and then trade it right back immediately with all these different bots to try and that just seems like a mess to me. Whereas this, I can actually just swap decks very, very quickly. You do have to use an online interface where you upload a deck and then say what cards you want taken out of it because you already have them or whatever. And then you say, okay, I want to rent that deck. Then their bot will start a chat with you and then you can get those cards.
Okay.
Okay. So there is a little bit of, like, I feel like it really benefits from having two monitors because okay. I can have Magic Online up and then I can have the list over here and kind of look at, you know, what I have and don't have, et cetera. But it's been pretty pain-free. Some people have told me that occasionally they're out of cards. I haven't run into that yet, but I'm not playing older formats. Where I think the value is a little bit more dubious is in Legacy, Vintage, and Modern.
Mm-hmm.
Because then we're talking about non-rotating formats, and unless you're planning on testing a lot of modern decks, I think it's a financially better decision to just buy the Legacy deck and just hold on to it forever.
For sure, yeah.
I don't care. I mean, so overall, very positive. What's your thoughts?
I mean, yeah.
Or questions, I should say, since you haven't...
Once again, I'm going to echo exactly what you've just said. You know, from my impressions of the service right now, like... if you're not 100% committed to standard, yes, this seems like the – and you're interested in playing standard, this is the way to go about doing it, especially for somebody – like both of us, I think – we both haven't been playing a lot of – I haven't been playing a lot of limited lately where I'm not trading enough to actually easily get into standard unless I want to invest $230 up front. And so, yeah, this to me is the best way to do it. And I'll echo exactly what you said. I think if you're playing Legacy or if you're interested in playing Legacy – I mean, the cards aren't going to go anywhere. They're going to hold their prices for the most part unless they just start printing Rashad imports all of a sudden, or digitally printing Rashad imports. Where, yeah, it makes a little bit more sense to just maybe invest in like a deck and kind of build other decks around that because Legacy cards work that way. So, yeah, I mean, it seems like a great service. It seems like a great option for people who want to just dig deep into the standard format.
Yeah, and there is some kind of mathematical equation here, right? That if you're going to play X amount of leagues in a week, it's worth your time. If you're not, then it's not, et cetera, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you could definitely break it down in that way. But I always recommend, like, especially with Legacy, maybe less so with Modern, but Legacy and Vintage, you could just build up your collection over time. And then once you have your Legacy deck online, you just stick your head right in the sand. You just don't pay any attention to any of the price fluctuation. You just have, like, I have had Maverick online for 6 months or 8 months or whatever, and it's just hanging out there.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do anything with it. I'm not going to touch it. I'm not going to trade any of those cards. They're just there. Whatever. And when I feel like playing Legacy or have an opportunity to, I can do that. Now, Modern does fluctuate from time to time, mm-hmm. right? But really, I still think it's better value for you to just hold on to it unless you are a serious Modern grinder. And those guys are out there, and they play 6-7 Modern decks over the course of a year. You know, cool.
Yeah.
That's not me. but, I mean, dude, I played 5 standard leagues at essentially no cost. Like, in terms of, you know, I went quote infinite in terms of my buy-in and being able to like recycle my buy-in over and over again.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas even with the mono red disaster, I was able to do that. So it was just like a flat fee, $35. I was able to go through, I don't know how many standard decks and test the format, which is pretty valuable to me. And it might not be valuable to you. So anyway, thumbs up. I do think you kind of have to evaluate your commitment level and where you're at
mm-hmm.
when you want to do it. And for some people that are heavy drafters, probably the $10 a month plan is where you want to be, because there are a lot of people that they just draft their way into standard decks, and cool, man. If you can do that, then that's awesome. But overall, thumbs up, Cameron. So we're going to get out of this segment, and we're going to get super current and talk about a movie from 1996, right?
Love it.
All right, we'll be right back. All right, Cameron. Some super relevant pop culture discussion. What's up with you, man?
So I want to take you back to the Academy Awards of 1998. And do you remember what won Best Picture?
I believe that would be Titanic.
It was Titanic. And do you remember one of the films that was up against it?
I remember all of them. Yeah. I bet I can do this. You
okay,
ready?
Okay.
As Good as It Gets, Good Will Hunting, L.A. Confidential, and The Full Monty.
Okay.
I feel like I missed one.
I have to look this up. But we know that Titanic won, but what was the best picture of that year?
So L.A. Confidential. Yeah. L.A. Confidential is one of my favorite movies ever, maybe my absolute favorite. But I'm interested to hear your thoughts, because you've obviously seen it before, but you've revisited it recently. Huh?
Yeah, yeah. I've seen it multiple times. And it's actually been probably like 10 years since I've actually revisited L.A. Confidential. And it's a crime noir character drama about like L.A. and crooked cops in the 1950s. It is very much of that era. The dialogue is very much 1950s. It's very much trying to capture that aesthetic. And it's incredibly good. Guy Pearce is in it. Russell Crowe, I think that was like his breakout of performance. You know, the James Cromwell, Kevin Spacey, Kim Passenger. There's just a ton of like names that like this is kind of how a lot of them got their start. So anyway, I call it a character drama because there's three main cops in it. There's Kevin Spacey, Guy Pearce, and Russell Crowe, and each has a very specific outlook on how they are cops in LA. You know, Guy Pearce is like this shining knight who is not going to do anything, and I mean he will take down the entire police force because of his ideals that he believes in. And Russell Crowe is just like this brutish thug that has a zero tolerance when it comes to women bashing or anything like that. And you know, if you haven't seen this film, go see it. And I can't recommend it enough. It's directed by Curtis Hanson, who did like 8 Mile, Wonder Boys, The River. I mean, he's a really good director. And I'm just going to wax poetic on this movie that is now 20 years old, which is kind of insane to think. But it holds up in a way that a lot of those other Best Picture nominees from 1998 don't. And it is so good. It is. I was watching it, and I was actually thinking like how Russell Crowe and Guy Pearce, they're at odds the entire time, and they're like you understand their motivations so crystal clearly, even though you might not agree with them. And I was thinking like, dang it, this is Batman v Superman, like Shining Knight and Brutish Thug, and they are like at odds, and like they have to work together. I mean, it's just like so good, and it's like every screenwriter needs to just look at this movie and say, this is how you develop characters. Done. I'm done. Okay.
Yeah, it's a masterpiece. It's also very, very well directed, mm-hmm. Especially for a period piece. And, you know, sometimes I forget, look, we're on the older end of the spectrum of Magic players, what movies are classics to us versus classics to others, right? And this movie I feel like all those films that were nominated for Best Picture that year are pretty good. But I think, which by the way, I think Big Lebowski was that year as well, and it didn't get nominated. But what I love about L.A. Confidential is, in that style of crime movie, is that it very much aligns with the way I feel a crime movie should be. One of my big issues with Coen Brothers films, and I love the Coen Brothers, they made Big Lebowski, but is that a lot of times characters in their films are forces of nature. They're not super duper three-dimensional. I think Fargo's probably the big factor that's not like that. But like if you look at No Country for Old Men especially, everyone's kind of an archetype, right? Mm-hmm. And it's trying to say something kind of meta above and beyond what's actually happening to the characters, which is great. And there's value to that. But what I love about LA Confidential is that they are all characters with flaws and motivations, and they are pursuing those motivations in a logical way. And you just don't see that in movies enough anymore.
No.
It's like Blockbuster Pictures, and look, I love Marvel U films, but this happens in the Marvel U films too. People do things and you're like, why are you doing that? This makes no sense. You are just serving the plot. It's dumb. Mm-hmm. Why would you go and do this? Right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like I said, it's horror movie logic that's been applied to everything. And I think there is a certain category of movie viewership that does not care, right? That they, you know, the whole what is the motivation doesn't occur to them as often, and that's fine, right? They just kind of want to have the film wash over them. But if you're looking for something that's a little bit more of an experience, that's a little bit more nuanced, LA Confidential is that. I love that film.
Yeah, can't recommend it enough.
The book is okay. It's a little bit different. It's actually a lot different. They did a very bizarre thing with adapting it. They lifted scenes out of the book and did those scenes exactly, but the plot line, the through line, is not the same.
Oh, interesting.
And I want to say the book takes place over like 10 years.
Okay.
So it's a little
James
bit of
James Ellroy, right?
Yeah, James Ellroy, who is a great writer, and he's this really hard-boiled crime fiction writer. But his style has kind of gone off the deep end. I haven't been able to finish any of his books in 15 years.
Yeah, he did a Black Dahlia, right?
That was Black Dahlia, yeah. And American Tableau is probably his last great novel.
Right. Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, he's. I always prefer Elmore Leonard for straight crime. Mm-hmm. Another super underrated 90s crime film is Out of Sight, which is a little bit more of a fun romp picture. But anyway, no, that's great. Cameron, I don't have a ton new to talk about this week. I did want to mention Just Cause 3.
Yeah, it's free on PSN, right?
It's free on PSN. And you want to talk about big, dumb fun. Okay, you play this dude named Rico. It's basically, did you ever play Red Faction Guerrilla?
Yeah.
It's like that. It's like an open world Grand Theft Auto-like game. But we've taken every, even like slightest notion of things being grounded and just tossed it out the window. Like who cares, man? So basically, you can grapple onto anything, and then at any point, unlimited grapple, unlimited parachute, unlimited wingsuit. So you can just fly around anywhere, do anything. And basically, it's an island that's been taken over by a dictator. And you're told, hey, you got to tear down this dude's infrastructure. Do whatever you need to do. So, like, you will blow up an entire giant statue, debris, explosions everywhere, doesn't matter. And you get like a score meter that's just popping like crazy while this is all happening. And it'll actually compare any action you do with your friends list.
Oh.
So just like Burnout. So like as soon as I get done with a glide, they're like, hey, this is how your glide stacked up with all your friends' longest glide.
Oh, no.
Here's how your explosion. So they have this whole, and this is what I love about it, because there's a bunch of problems with it. The loading times are long. Mechanically, it's not the most sound thing in the world. But they do the Burnout Paradise thing, where you're constantly in competitions with your friends. But what's hilarious is you'll like blow up like a whole city block, and all the citizens are like, yeah, Rico, it's like, this was your house, man. But they don't care. They're like cheering you on. I took a car away from a guy, and as I'm pulling him out of his car, he goes, the things I do for this revolution.
That's very self-aware. That's very good, yeah.
You know, you do have to endure some story stuff at the beginning before they really set you loose. But here's what's, and the driving is kind of that weird Grand Theft Auto floaty driving.
Okay, yeah.
But they do the whole thing where you have to clear out an area, and then the rebellion takes it over. And as soon as you take it over, they're like, oh, hey, look, we've unlocked a bunch of challenges for you. So you get like your reward for like clearing out an area and taking it over, like in Assassin's Creed or any of those other open world games, is that you get a driving challenge or a wingsuit challenge or an explosion challenge, and you can fly or drive anything. Now here's where my mind changed on this game, right? I'm driving and I just drive down like off a cliff just to see what happens. And I push the exit button thinking, oh, I'm going to parachute out. That's not what happened. I exit the car, I get on top of the car, and I'm like surfing on the car while it's going like flying off this cliff, and then I can jump off of it. So
that's sick.
it's a no-cost download. It's kind of a confection, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah,
you're not
yeah.
gonna be like, I need to do this for 80 hours. But I did laugh a lot. I will admit that.
That's worth it there. Yeah.
So anyway. Cameron, if someone would like to get a hold of you, where can they find you?
They can do that all on Twitter at Cameron_McCoy.
If they want to see your new line of V-necks, where could they go?
I don't know.
Okay, I didn't know if you wanted to. We need
J.
That's
Crew.
What we need.
We'll say J. Crew. Okay.
We'll just say their new fall line. I'm just saying. And I am at Curtis Now. Our official show feed is at Spike VDMTG. We will check you guys next week.